Welcome to The Good Stuff with the Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. My voice is already cracking, so that's not a good sign.
I'm here for you.
Maybe I got it over with. So what's new? We're into late spring.
I know.
We talked about spring last show and just sort of all the different things that are happening in the vineyard.
So there's a lot going on in the vineyard well into bud break now. And, you know, that's always sort of the start of the season. Hopefully we won't have too many cold, frosty nights so our farmers can get some sleep before the real season starts. But, you know, this time of year is always kind of the tricky year in the vineyards where we're hoping for growth, but also not anything that would get damaged.
Right.
But we actually have an expert on all of this and grape growing on our show today. So I'm not even going to go down that path because we'll just wait and ask him all the questions. So
yeah, we can do that. Anything that you want to highlight that's going on with the wine growers?
Yeah, well, we talked a little bit last show. We've been talking a lot about on all the shows just about our sort of new sports partnerships we have going on and how exciting that is to just try this avenue of sports and wine and connecting the two. And I kind of laugh because like our growers, you know, obviously sports have a season. And so this past week, I was actually down in Houston. We hosted or were the wine partner for their fundraiser gala for the Houston Rockets and some of the nonprofits that they support. And so it was really great. The Rockets have been an incredible partner. They actually buy most of the wine to bring into the concessions and some winemaker dinners that they're hosting with us at the Toyota Center. But in this case, we reached out to our wine partners and just asked if they would donate since this isn't their fundraiser. So the wine was flowing actually last night in Houston and was pretty incredible. And I think what I've observed with all of our sports activations is that people love good wine. And so I think what we're really trying to do is elevate the wine experience, maybe introduce the wine experience in some cases to the sports arenas and the teams and the fans, but in some cases just elevate the access of the quality of wine and the variety of wine they get to enjoy. And so whether it's a wine event we did at the Post Oak Hotel a few weeks ago with the Rockets where we were the wine partner and literally ran out of wine, which had never happened in their experience. It was some of their fans, you know, season ticket holders, as well as their other sort of partners were there. And, you know, we had to close the bars because we ran out of wine. Luckily, it was like right towards the end of the event. But I think that's a fantastic problem. So I always am like, when you get to bring good wine, which Sonoma County is well known for our world-class wines, it's fun to watch how much people really enjoy that and actually enjoy learning about it too. So it's a great education. So we're kind of rounding out. Sadly, the Rockets did not have their best season ever. So they will, you know, most likely not be in the playoffs. So as part of that, we will be kind of rounding out and bringing to a close our season with the Rockets. I think we're doing our last winemaker dinner there April 5th. So in a couple of weeks. And then we'll be transitioning into the other events that the Toyota Center hosts. So they do a number of concerts and other activations. So we're kind of looking about how we continue that relationship for the rest of the year. And then with that, baseball season's upon us. So we, you know, are transitioning from basketball into baseball and starting to activate our partnership with the Giants. So a lot more to come on that and lots of exciting things to come on that. So there's the grape growing season and then the sports season. So we're here for both of it.
Well, and I think the nice thing is that sports fans, you want to drink nice wine whether your team is doing well.
Well, yes.
And maybe even more if they're not doing well.
Exactly.
So either way, Sonoma County wine is there for you.
Good wine is always the answer.
It really is. Okay. Well, we have about a quick time for an introduction here. And then when we come back, we will get into a conversation with our guest today, Paul Sloan. He is a vineral and the owner of Small Vines Wine. So to your point, we will be asking him lots of things about vineyards in Sonoma County and how he decided to do to plant his own vineyard and how he manages that and the wines that they make and so many other questions.
So many questions.
All right.
And so many answers.
Let's hope. When we come back, we will be speaking with Paul Sloan. This is The Good Stuff. Sign up for our newsletter online at SonomaWineGrape.org. Thank you. are back on The Good Stuff with our guest today, Paul Sloan, vigneron and owner of Small Vines Wines. And I'm just going to read a little bit of his bio because I love some parts of it so much. But Paul was a young wine steward with a dream of making estate-grown, world-class wines. Started out with a pickup truck and a shovel, as so many people who end up in wine do. And we will get into this with you directly, but Paul's inspired by a transformative experience with a rare Burgundy wine and decided to think about making wine in California. He began in high school working as a busboy, learning about wine from restaurateurs. And then you kind of got a little bit more into Burgundy and learning about Pinot Noir, I think specifically, and Chardonnay, two of the wines that you make today at Small Vines. And so you and your wife, Catherine, now own Small Vines Wines, or Small Vines Wines. You started that in 1998 after working with wine grower Warren Dutton, somebody that we have talked about quite a few times
that?
In this show.
I don't know who that is.
Well, you're here to learn. So I'd love to hear a little bit more from Paul directly about kind of this journey. I mean, you started out as a wine steward. You started out working in restaurants. But why was wine interesting to you at such a young age?
That's a great question. At first, it was just, you know, let's have some fun. But I was working at John Ash & Company, and looking through the wine list there, you know, you see some of the great classic California producers, Joseph Swan and Mount Eden Vineyards, and, you know, just some of the amazing other local producers that were on the list. And then we had a great section of French Burgundy. And over time, having the opportunity to share experiences with all of those bottles really shaped where I sit today. I'll be the first to say that California is not Burgundy. I don't make Burgundian style wine. I make California Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and I'm extremely proud of that. Although some of my influences come from growers that have been farming the same land for 3,000 years, and maybe I borrowed some ideas and implemented some practices that I learned from these families of nine generations of farmers farming the same land. Sonoma County is an amazing place to produce Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and I was really inspired. I remember the first time I had the opportunity, I was doing inventory at John Ash & Company. I was counting cases of wine, and I found this dusty old case of Joseph Swan Chardonnay from like 1978 or something like that. And what crossed my mind was, chef's not even going to want to cook with this wine, but we better open a bottle before we throw it out just to make sure we can mark it as spoiled. We opened that bottle and shared it with every food server, the chefs. It was absolutely amazing. Wow. And that was the first point in my life I really said, wow, California can make exceptional and age-worthy Chardonnay. This was in 1993, and not everybody was sort of aware that California Chardonnay could age. Mm-hmm. Most people thought, like, if it was more than 3 years old, you kind of pour it out. You don't drink it anymore. And so that really shaped a lot of my thought processes of what could be done in vineyards and with wines in Sonoma County.
So did you grow up here?
I did. My grandparents,
local.
There are a few of us, right? Yeah. My grandparents moved to Sonoma County in 1944 from Pennsylvania. And my grandfather was he was the first and second OBGYN in Sonoma County. So delivered a lot of babies in this area. But he fancied himself a cowboy on the weekends and his time off. And so I grew up on a 250-acre horse and cattle ranch in the eastern side of Santa Rosa, kind of Rincon Valley towards Los Alamos Road up in the foothills there of Hood Mountain. So
you were a young cowboy then?
I was. Horse and cattle, nothing to do with wine. My grandparents, if they drank wine, drink Carlo Rossi. So when I got to John Ash and asked the day I turned 21, I said, hey, can I start sitting in on the wine tastings to build the wine program. And 6 months later, I had read 40 books on wine from cover to cover, the Oxford Companion to Wine, you know, really fun reads like that. but I was fascinated. I sit in the restaurant till 4 o'clock in the morning just reading about wine. And then I had visited 65 different wineries on my time off. And the weekends, I would go see David Raffinelli, and he'd be like, hey, I need help doing a punch down, you know, jump in. And you're like 21 and a half and just, you know, starting to meet. That's when I realized that when David Raffinelli talked about his wines, he talked about it from, I grow wine. I'm not a grape grower. I'm a wine grower. Mm-hmm. And you saw it in his wines. You saw the character of the vineyard in the wines. And when I started seeing that from Burgundy and other parts of the world, that really is why I call myself a vigneron. That means that I farm the grapes that I make wine from. And I have the bottle at the end of my vision from all the way to how I decided to plant the vineyards in the very beginning, which is quite unique for Sonoma County and what most people are doing, especially back in 1998 when we started. So.
Right. So then how do you go from, you know, an occasional punch down with David Raffinelli to actually choosing to go to Burgundy and learning? And how long were you at John Ash? Like, what? How are you pulling this? How did you pull this all together?
You know, my life has been a series of sort of awarenesses. I call them light bulbs that go off of aha moments, if you will. And so I had this passion for wine, but I knew I didn't want to take the restaurant path. I kind of looked at the course of Master Sommeliers. Mm-hmm. I took a course called the Sterling Vineyard School of Service and Hospitality. It was headed by Evan Goldstein, which many of us know.
Yes.
There were only 9 Master Sommeliers in the U.S. at that time. 7 of them partnered to put on this wine education course at Sterling Vineyard. So quite an amazing opportunity. John Ash and Company sponsored us through that program. And At that point is when I made the decision that I'm going to learn as much as I can about wine through the restaurant world, but that I'm going to follow my roots back to ranching and the great outdoors. And I felt like farming and viticultural decisions, vineyard architecture, could shape the wine more than anything else. I felt like the science of enology at UC Davis was so good, and people like Ted Lemon at Literai had gone over to Burgundy and brought back winemaking techniques and so forth. I felt like that was pretty high level. I felt like viticulture would be something, if we made slightly different architectural design decisions, we could shape the style of wines from the ground up and maybe do less quote-unquote winemaking techniques and more farming for the style of wine that we wanted to produce. And so maybe it's less winemaking and more farming, which I think is what Sonoma County is all about, is farming great, incredible products. So
let's take this show on the road.
Yeah. We would agree. Yes. Yeah.
No, so. Definitely agree with that. But it is that's a great perspective, and I think one that you definitely get when you are farming and also making the wine, and you're seeing it holistically. I know a lot of our growers just farm, or they're farmers first and foremost, and it's always interesting when you see those dynamics, or when a winemaker actually tries farming really for the first time, or when a farmer actually tries being in sort of in the cellar and making the wine and the blending and understanding how the decisions that were made in the farming actually impact, you know, the final wine product. I think that's where I think the biggest aha light bulb moments, to steal your framing, I've seen happen, at least in my time here in Sonoma County. And it's been really fun when those kind of moments of understanding and maybe really deep appreciation of what those two very different skill sets.
Well, and I think there was a period of time, I remember not long ago hearing an interview with Paul Hobbs, of all people that we've spoken about before, but, you know, it was an active, you know, there was active division between winemaking and wine growing, and winemakers were not encouraged at all to be involved in wine growing and vice versa. And it really was maybe, I don't know if it was 90s or really when you started to observe early 2000s, a shift happening where more people were wanting to do both, or people who had studied winemaking really wanted to get into the dirt.
And walk the vineyards with the growers. I mean, I remember I was doing a fellowship and I had a chance to be in Champagne for a couple of weeks, and I remember talking to some of the winemakers there, and they were like, oh, we typically don't even go into the vineyards in Champagne, right? That it's through sort of a broker, and they all the grapes are crushed at a, you know, sort of a common house, and mm-hmm. then they pick that up. And I'm like, how do we even know you got the right grapes and the right juice? Like, how does that happen? Like, where, what's the tagging right. system? Like, you just show up and you pick it. Like, I don't understand. And so I think that is one of the things, especially in sort of the new world and in California and Sonoma County, is this idea of that partnership between the winemaker and the wine grower towards a common goal of what ends up in the bottle. It's pretty unique and really special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's been neat to see it over the last 26, 28, 30 years yeah. Of people.
Don't age yourself. You don't have to. It's fine.
People transitioning more to where it really is a very distinct partnership if you have a grower and a winemaker, they're really working a lot more closely together. And I think that's just a rising tide floats all ships sort of mentality that I love about Sonoma County. It exists and really is strong here, that people want to continue to do better. They want to do more. They know that there's opportunities for that here. So it's really, really fun. So
I was going to say, you have a partner in this wine journey of yours, your wife. So how did the two of you meet? And was she up for this wine thing? Or how did it just get, you know, this is the time of our show where we put you really on the spot.
Right.
I would love to know how that all unfolded.
Just because I'm the one in front of the microphone does not mean that I'm the one that made this happen. It would never have happened without Catherine's support, her direction, her helping bring focus to what we're doing. She's an amazing, amazing partner, and it would never have happened without her. So, you know, I met Warren Dutton on a horseback ride. My wife is a grew up 4-H with cattle. And so when we started falling in love, my last day at John Ash was the first day I met my wife. I already knew I was leaving John Ash and starting this like farming career and met her. And she was a photographer down in San Francisco at the time. But, you know, as we started spending more time in nature together and so forth, and you start talking about how you want to shape your family and thinking mm-hmm. about, okay, well, we both lived on land. That's something really important to us. How can you afford to live on land in Sonoma County? And as the apple industry was sort of fading mm-hmm. and all of the logistics there, and I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, there were more vineyards in Sonoma County pre-prohibition until like 1998.
Right.
So people say, oh, vineyards pushed apples out. And I would say that apples push vineyards out because of prohibition. Right. And now there's an ebb and flow of what's profitable for the agriculture, what's viable. Diversity to me is wonderful, but we just heard that we were losing Manzana products, right? And they're moving to Washington. Yeah. So another blow to the apple industry, which is sad. But, you know, the vineyards have been around for a very long time in Sonoma County. And when I met Warren on this horseback ride, and he and told him that I wanted to get into the farming mm-hmm. side, I was enrolled in the junior college viticulture program, and he said, well, come and work for me. So, of course, I showed up the first day, met Joe and Steve, and it was a little bit like, who's this guy, and why is he here the first day?
Wait, do we have a third brother we don't know about? What's going on?
Warren
Mom,
did not tell them
Dad?
I was going to be coming. But that was such an amazing experience. I learned so much over the next 2 years. And, you know, and Warren actually, I started telling him about my vineyard architecture ideas. And he really was inspired by and said, just go do it. Like, I'm not going to change my spacing and what I do, but your idea to grow wines with better natural acidity, with more structure and concentration from the vines competing by being planted so closely together, you should really just be a pioneer. Just do it.
And
he actually introduced me to the first client that we planted a vineyard for, and Catherine and I were so thankful for that. So he was once again embracing, and a rising tide floats all ships for us to get started back in 1998.
And for our listeners out there in Australia and Canada, Mexico, Spain, Italy, since we're so excited you're listening, thank you. Steve Dutton is my husband now, so that's why we kind of are tongue-in-cheek a little bit about the Dutton family. But sadly, I never met Warren because he had passed before I moved to Sonoma County. But I love hearing the stories, certainly, and I'm very close with my mother-in-law, Gail, and just love hearing about how there were these sort of renegade icons that really helped shape Sonoma County, and most of them were farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We are really a county and community shaped by farming, and I think that is so important in our story and very telling about who we are today.
And so many of them, like Gail, have told us they didn't even like wine.
Yeah.
They actively did not like wine.
Warren told her, you're going to have to learn how to like this wine. And she said, why? Because your name's on the bottle. So get used to it. So there
get
you
used
go.
To it. Yeah. Exactly. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will spend some more time with Paul Sloan. Back on the good stuff, speaking with Paul Sloan of Small Vines Wines. And you've mentioned a couple times just this notion of architecture, sort of what you wanted to do in your vineyard that would be different. After spending time, I mean, you've planted a lot of vineyards across, I think, Napa Valley and Sonoma County. And so those were not necessarily to this architecture, but for your own wines, for the vigneron vision that you had, you wanted something very specific. Can you describe a little bit more of what that looks like?
Yeah, and I think I'll start by talking about a bit of the history of how vineyard architecture came about. And mechanization tools and so forth. So I mentioned Prohibition earlier in the show, and that really shaped Sonoma County's agricultural community. We, for the most part, became orchard farmers. When Prohibition gets lifted in 1933, the tractor had been invented and became available to farmers. So now we're farming with these very large orchard tractors. And when Prohibition gets lifted, they didn't tear out all of their orchards and buy a new tractor and plant vineyards. They tore out a few acres and experimented with grapes as well as farming apples or whatever they were farming. They used the same tractor. And these large tractors necessitated a 12-foot tractor row, which is a very wide spacing for most vineyards across the world. But it allowed that same tractor to be used. And with the wide spacing, you didn't really have to do much with the growth of the vines. We called it the California sprawl, and we literally let the shoots kind of sprawl out. Well, California's got a lot of sunshine. A lot of people say it's hot, and I would beg to differ when you look at actual climate data during the summer, that it's not hot, but we have a lot of days of sunshine, and depending on where you're at is where the temperature can be warm. So this sprawl created, it's like carrying an umbrella around on a hot, sunny day. It sort of shaded the fruit. In many cases, there was too much shade and the wines weren't good. But in the best vineyards where the vines were balanced, the wines were incredibly good. And what that shade did was preserve natural acidity, and it sort of ripened the fruit. When it tasted ready to make wine from, it had less sugar. So that would result in a lower alcohol wine. I'm not talking low to no alcohol. I'm talking about where I felt that Chardonnay and Pinot Noir did best, between 12.5% and 13.5% alcohol. And that was common in Europe, where you saw Pinot Noir and Chardonnay grow, and that was common in the wines from the 60s and 70s from this area, that most of the wines were 12.5% to 13.5% alcohol and had good acidity, so the wines could age for a very long time. So when phylloxera was killing the vineyards during the 1980s, we saw a fairly dramatic shift in the alcohol content of the wines. The necessity for winemakers to add acid back to the fruit to bring the fruit into balance. So what had happened is we narrowed our tractor rows down to 8 feet because tractors were narrower. You could get a tractor with more horsepower, more stable, more compact, so you could get more linear feet of fruiting wire per acre. It was an efficiency and farming increase, but that made it so that we had to train all the growth vertically on an 8-foot tractor row. Well, that exposed the fruit to a lot more sunshine than California fruit had ever seen. And it kind of spiked the sugar levels. It respired more natural acidity. And I felt that that fruit was coming for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, right? I'm not talking all fruit. I'm talking about these two varietals because that's all I work with. I felt that that was making a wine that was different than what I wanted to produce. Mm-hmm. Delicious wines, I'm not talking quality. I'm talking style. I'm talking about what I wanted. The characteristics I wanted to produce in wine were I wanted low input winemaking, meaning the additions that I had as a winemaker in the cellar to be as minimal as possible. I'm not talking natural wine. I will add sulfur to preserve my wines and protect them, but if I can get away with no other additives to the wine whatsoever, of course, that means I'm an organic farmer or beyond regenerative farmer, and we can go into that later. But the spacing I chose, I felt 8 foot was exposing the fruit to too much sunshine. And when you tasted some of the other wines that from the 12 foot spacing next to Burgundy, you said, wow, the flavor concentration in Burgundy is a lot higher. So I started thinking about the size of the plant, how many pounds of grapes were on each plant. And of course, there were books like the Oxford Companion to Wine that I mentioned that talked about Pinot Noir being negatively impacted by having too much fruit on a vine. And I said, okay, well, this plant, you need less fruit on a vine. Mm-hmm. So it shaped a spacing, this theory of having a 4 foot tractor row, having the vines close enough that the root systems would compete, which would thicken the skins and increase the tannins and the flavor concentration in the fruit. And then dry farming became part of the conversation. I will say that this high-density planting style, where I have 3,630 vines per acre, most people plant about 1,089 vines, so that's like 3.5 times more vines. It's a lot more expensive, and it's site-specific. You should not do it on every site. Mm-hmm. You should find the sites that it's appropriate for, and when you do, it's magical what will happen with if you're looking for those characteristics in your wine that I mentioned: brighter natural acidity, slightly lower alcohol content, and really concentrated flavors. And that's exactly coming from the sommelier or wine steward side of things. That was what I wanted: age-worthy, food-friendly wines that I did nothing in the additive aspect to make the wines. And that's exactly what I've achieved with changing the architecture of the vineyards.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back a little bit.
So many questions.
I know. You fall in love with Catherine. You start working for Warren Dutton. And you fast forward way into you have a wine and you have a vineyard and you're doing all this practice. So how do you go from I'm working for Warren Dutton and I'm falling in love to now I'm doing all of this?
Well, when you don't have any money to buy land in Sonoma County and it's really expensive, you get creative.
Yeah.
So,
I think this is an important part of your story and really inspirational for how you can not be a fifth generation farmer in a region or winemaker and still do the thing you love to do.
Yeah, so by planting vineyards on other people's land, right? And Warren actually introduced me to the first person mm-hmm. I planted a vineyard for. Said I'm too busy, and you should plant this vineyard. So I plant the vineyard for them, and then if you really liked the people and you liked the site, you thought it was an amazing site, I would do everything I could to sign a long-term lease on that piece of land, and then I would farm that vineyard, keep the fruit for myself, take it to a custom crush mm-hmm. facility, and made wine out of the grapes. So I've been farming, you know, that the first time I did that was in 2005. So it took me 7 years to be able to save enough money to make 3 barrels of wine, 75 cases of wine. Luckily, it was well received. We went back to John Ash, where I used to work, and they loved the wine and they bought a bunch. We went to Cyrus, 2 Michelin star mm-hmm. restaurant up in Healdsburg. That was our second. And then the French Laundry was our third placement.
So talk about how good did that feel to walk back into John Ash on the other side, or how nerve-wracking even to have them trying your wine with this idea they're going to buy your wine sitting where you had sat. I mean, what was that like?
It was nerve-wracking, and it was a completely new team, yeah. you know, so I didn't necessarily know them. But when you share the story, because let's face it, the story, the wine has to be good, but the story has to be interesting yeah. as well. So of what we were doing and why, then people got behind it. And I think it really complemented food well. So it worked out very well. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we just kept saving our pennies and leasing back other vineyards. And, you know, it's really hard in a very capital intensive business, yeah, like the wine industry, and especially producing wine, to do that. But we lived a pretty, I'll say, humble lifestyle, mm-hmm, and worked hard. We were our own best employees and probably still are, although we have some amazing employees, like Lindsay, our estate director, and Jason, our assistant winemaker. And, you know, so it's a great team that brings it all together. But a lot of it's just persistence, knowing what your vision is and sticking to it and yeah, not wavering. And we'll share more about the estate that we own now and where our wines are produced. And we make 3,000 cases of wine now. So we've continually just kept growing and keeping our vision that we started with always at the forefront of the direction we're heading. So,
all right, we will take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Paul Sloan. Sloan, talking about small vines, wines. And, you know, I was just curious, you talked a lot about how you sort of made the business work and planting vineyards so that you could save some money and eventually make your own wines, and how they were very well received kind of from the get-go. But how did you find the site sort of where you're based now, where your winery is and where people can see these high density vines?
You know, Catherine and I, as we started having kids and, you know, wanting to raise a family, we saved enough money that we started looking for little parcels of land. You mentioned Paul Hobbs earlier. Well, Paul Hobbs really had good financial backing, so he outbid us on a few properties that we had put offers in on.
You gotta love the guy and hate the guy at the same time.
Oh,
it's okay.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, they're beautiful, yeah, properties, and yeah, he did yeah, beautiful stuff with them, so it's yeah, awesome to see. But then my mom was our real estate agent, so we looked at 273 different pieces of property
before
we bought this. She was very patient with us. And I actually found it off the market. I was developing a vineyard for another winery, local winery, Dumal Estate Vineyard, and it was up off of Coffee Lane, just west of where we're at. And I asked, I hired an electrician that I met in a grocery store parking lot because—
As one does.
You know, yeah, well, I got three bids, and Dumal said, these are too high, find somebody else.
Awesome.
So I walked up to this guy in a parking lot in Forestville, and and he ended up installing it. Well, he ended up being the owner of this property.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I kept saying, hey, let me lease the land from you and plant apples, because I didn't really have the money to buy that piece of property at the time. And he said, nah, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I would call him. I put it in my personal planner, my Palm Pilot, to call him
the Palm Pilot
every three. Yeah, yeah, exactly. There I am dating myself. Again,
yeah.
So every 3 months I would call him, and I had just finished getting up at 11 o'clock, harvesting all night. It was September, and pops up on my screen to call Steve. So I called him, and he said, you can stop calling me about leasing it. I have to sell the property. I said, I'll be there in 15 minutes.
And, oh my gosh.
So we sat in this little office building, kind of finding out what he needed to make it work. And my mom helped me write the contract, but we bought it off the market.
Wait, how did he know you were interested? Just kidding.
A little persistence back then.
I was almost stalking back then, Bob.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. No.
So it's an amazing piece of property. It's the original Barlow family homestead. So many people have heard of the Barlow Center, yeah, in Sebastopol. Well, this family was berry growers first on Barlow Lane in Sebastopol.
Yeah.
They had 154-acre farm and built our home in the late 1800s. Well, they built one of the first apple packing and cold storage, uh-huh, buildings in the 1920s on our property.
Wow. So cool.
So, and we got to convert that into our winery. So our production facility is on the same site that our tasting room is, and we get to walk out into the vineyards with folks to visit, kind of share our philosophy, really demystify the world of wine for people, and just talk about how farming and these sort of very low-input winemaking techniques can make incredible product. And so we love having visitors. It's all by appointment only, and that's mostly because it's my wife and I and Lindsay, so we either need to pull ourselves out of the vineyard to make sure we're actually there when you arrive or something. So right. It's not to be pretentious. It's to make sure we're actually available. So
and how do people find you and make appointments?
Well, the website, smallvines.com, is the easiest way, yeah. And obviously Instagram and all of that is a part of it. Not me. I've never done an Instagram post. Don't think I ever will.
It's good to split up responsibilities. Yeah. Yes,
but, so love having the visitors. Pretty easy to find us at smallvines.com and
Instagram at smallvines as well.
Yes. And I would welcome anyone to come out. Groups are good, you know, and individuals or couples great as well. So
vineyard experience, a wine tasting experience, and you're drinking with you or your wife or Lindsay.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Very Sonoma County in all the best ways.
Exactly.
We are going to take another quick break and be back soon.
Are back on The Good Stuff and closing out our show with our favorite segment, which is The Good Stuff Wine. And so we haven't actually talked to Paul yet about the wine he brought us in today. So we're enjoying some Chardonnay. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And I'm going to hit you up from some other wine for Tuesday night. So
so I produce these varietals that are, I think, great for the western part of the mm-hmm. Sonoma Coast and western part of Sonoma County, the cool, more coastal-influenced areas. So the Chardonnay, my wines are all about expression of sight. You can call it terroir, whatever you want, but I really try to remove the fingerprints of myself as a individual making this wine and let the weather that the fruit experienced and the site be the expression of the wine. And I think it's a great Chardonnay site. We make a little sparkling wine from kind of the coldest or most frost-prone area in this vineyard. The acidity down there, we're always kind of waiting for it. So decided to make sparkling from that. Catherine and I love drinking champagne and sparkling.
Yeah,
and,
well, you have good friends here. But happy to join you anytime.
Yeah, nothing disgorged yet, so I couldn't share it with you.
Oh, well. We'll wait for that.
We'll be ready.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back.
So, and then the style of Pinot Noir is very similar. So I use very little new oak on all of my wines. They're barrel fermented, but I like freshness. I like sort of, brightness and energy in my wines. And that's sort of stylistically what I'm after on the wine side.
Okay. Well, I think we're ready to enjoy them this Tuesday as our Tuesday night wines.
I think so. I mean, I think we'll have to get together so that way we can have both the Pinot and Chardonnay. I'm a little bummed that the sparkling's not ready yet because I got very excited for a second. But I'm just going to be patient.
Well, I'll come back and do another show with you.
I mean, how many 273 places you looked at? So I'll learn a little patience in the sparkling before you found your home. So that's definitely going to be our Tuesday night wines.
And so these wines, the wines that you brought are TBH Vineyard. And what is TBH?
So because we bought the old Barlow Homestead property, we call it the Barlow Homestead Vineyard, or TBH for the acronym. And history is a huge part of wine and agriculture. And so I love kind of sharing the history of this site and the stewards of the land before we became the stewards currently. So.
Well, go meet with Paul and Catherine. Check out Small Vines, smallvines.com, if you want to make an appointment, which I think is a must.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Paul, for joining us today. And from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.